Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. This episode, we turn the clock back and reminisce on the state of enthusiast hardware in 2009. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McKay. Greetings, Darren. We have reached the dog days of summer.
Yes, we have.
And it's hot in the lab. We have the garage door open, so you might hear some fireworks or a car drive by or maybe even a fly buzzing by the microphone.
But it's the season.
It is hot. So we're going to try and keep as cool as possible. And that got me thinking. Normally, this particular episode is one where I give you a show breakdown of Computex.
Oh, that's right. It's the time of year.
And they didn't have it this year.
Oh.
Yeah, it got delayed. Ironically, the very first Computex I attended was right after the SARS pandemic that basically moved, well, all the trade shows got delayed so they could get SARS under control.
Right.
And then they had it again in September. Well, with the current COVID situation, the organizers of Computex delayed it until September, but then they went ahead and canceled it because of the way that the world is.
Yeah, I get that, but it's kind of a slow time of year anyway. It doesn't seem like there's really much going on in the hardware world or really even the software world.
No, we were looking for topics. We're going to give you a little veil behind the screen or whatever you want to call that.
That's right. Never mind the man behind the curtain.
But we were looking. There isn't really any new hardware coming out because it's summertime and this is what hardware manufacturers do. We were looking at the current games that were coming out and there isn't really anything until maybe September that we are interested in? Unless you want to get like a discount on Borderlands 3, which is a crappy game to begin with.
Well, you know, you can nickel and dime some stuff right now, but yeah, new releases, not a whole lot.
I started going through some archives and I found an article that I saved from back in December that I thought might be a fun thing to talk about on the podcast and never came up.
Oh, okay.
And it's from PC Mag.
Why?
It's titled, What PC Gaming Was Like in 2009.
Oh, 2000. Now that's a way back machine right there.
Yeah.
I feel like we need like a sound effect. Doo-doo-doo, doo-doo-doo, right? Back to 2009. That's 10 years.
Well, and that was the whole idea because we had basically a change of the millennium, you know, 2020.
Right.
The author of this article was like, well, what did gaming look like 10 years ago? And he started going through and was talking about the systems. And that's really where we started. We go, what kind of machine did I have 10 years ago?
Well, and for those of you that don't want to go back into the archives, 2009 is about when Dennis and I first started working together. And so I was still doing some freelance work for a couple of other sites. And I don't know how we got together. I feel like we've done a podcast about this, but it's been a long time.
It has been. Going through the article, we have two systems that the author puts in here. The Acer Predator pre-built in 2009. And what do you suppose the CPU was?
So now you should preface by pointing out that these were Apex machines back in the day. This top dogs.
The high-end stuff.
Long-time listeners will know that I am not a Apex top dog machine buyer generally. So these were what we considered the peak back in those days. So Acer Predator, that's an amazing name. It reminds me of when all the PCs had really funky names. And all the boutique builders were just getting started.
So we have the CPU, 3 gigahertz Intel Core 2 Quad Q9650.
Now that was a spendy processor back in those days.
Yeah, that was like a grand.
And 3.0 gigahertz. Wow, so fast.
So fast. It's like a Threadripper.
Dual core, right? No, quad core.
It's quad core.
What was the hyperthreading back in those days?
We had 8 threads per processor. I mean, it was hyperthreading per core. So the Intel Core 2 Quads were basically the quad-core edition of the dual-core, the Core 2 Duos back in the day.
Yeah, which is what I ran, if I'm not mistaken.
And the package was one of the first LGAs, where LAN grid arrays. So this was where they moved the pins to the socket. This was one of the first editions for that. And it was the LGA 775.
Wow, okay. So $1,000 processor. Only a 3.0. Okay, keep me going.
And they put in there two NVIDIA GeForce 9800 GTXs in SLI, which SLI was the thing back then. I mean, that was how you got the best performance.
Well, this is kind of early in before you could do 3 and then 4 and then none.
Pretty much. Let's see, they did 4 gigs of RAM, and we had 2 300 gig, 10,000 RPM hard drives. So we had the Velociraptors. Gosh,
those things were amazing. I probably still have those on a shelf somewhere.
I still have 4 somewhere.
Good old Velociraptors. And remember, they had the glass panels for a while too.
Oh yeah, those were the larger, older ones though. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
They work great in a build.
If you're out there listening, why are there not glass paneled and LED drives? Oh, wait, no, I know, because we don't do rotational drives.
We could do that with an SSD. That's relatively safe.
Well, we need, 10,000 RPM LED SSDs.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Ooh.
Getting it all spinning around in circles.
Well, of course, the way the market's going these days, we'll be lucky if anybody remembers what a rotational drive is within the next couple of years.
Oh, yeah. Well, rotational drives matter.
All right, what else we got? Oh, optical drive, a Blu-ray drive.
Blu-ray, yeah. Oh, and the price, $2,700.
Holy cow.
In today's money, that's probably around $5,000.
Yeah, but that was a lot back in those days.
Yeah, it was.
All right, well, we got a second build.
Speaking of $5,000.
Oh, ouch.
We have the Intel QX9850 Quad-Core Extreme. This was the Super Unlocked Edition.
Extreme!
Ironically, still at 3 gigahertz. The difference here was L2 cache or L3 cache. One of the caches was a hell of a lot bigger.
And
overclocked.
And overclocking. This is interesting because this one mentions a 1,000-watt power supply, which must have been a big deal back in 2009.
Yeah, they were expensive. And not many companies made them. And they were not 80-plus gold certified or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, were they even certified at all? Okay, so we got RAM. Ooh.
150-gig Raptor hard drive. And this is the big one. This was the one that had the window on it.
Oh, yeah.
The 300 gigs, those were the smaller ones that were sitting in a heatsink.
Yeah, but those were sexy and hard to get.
Well, yeah, everybody wanted them.
Oh, now this one's a machine built after my own heart here. 2 Radeon HD 2870s in crossfire mode.
Ah, yes, crossfire. I'm not sure which one it would be faster, the 9800 GTXs or the 2870s.
Price-wise would lead you to believe the Radeons were faster back in those days. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, I think I ran some Radeon drives, so I'm going to defend them and say they were definitely faster.
Oh, yes, I would totally agree.
We have to go back and find some old benchmarks, but those are $5,700 in 2009.
Yeah, well, this was also from Xfinity or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that like a cable company?
It seems like they are, but yeah. I don't even remember that company.
Yeah,
maybe luxury machine.
At $6,000, maybe that's why they're not around.
Good Lord, that's like a $10,000 machine these days. Those are those extreme builds that we laugh at.
Now, speaking of mid-range build, he lists in here the Antec Performance mid-range of 2009.
So a mid-range PC. Now, this is more like what I would have built, although it does have an i7 in it.
And I want to say this is the CPU I was running. So we have the Intel i7-920.
This was
Nehalem processor.
We may have to have you fact check that.
Probably. I know I have 2 920s in my box of parts.
So this is interesting, a little bit faster Radeon drive, a 4890.
Mm-hmm. And only one.
Mm-hmm.
We have 6 gigabytes of DDR3. And as you know, the Nehalem era had triple channel memory.
Nice. 1 terabyte rotational drive, 7200, brand.
Oh my God.
It could be anybody.
That's slow. 7200 RPMs.
Oh, can you imagine? It must have taken like an hour to load a game.
Just feel the latency.
I almost feel like this is dial-up.
I think people are on dial-up in 2009.
That's, well, maybe.
Or really slow DSL.
Cable was out. Okay, so we got Blu-ray or HD DVD. Yeah.
And a Thermaltake Speedo black full tower case.
That's okay. Like
probably a $30 case.
Woohoo!
And a 700-watt modular PSU, because you have to have modular back then.
Modular was kind of a big deal. They weren't always modular, but the price?
$1,200.
Very respectable.
Not too bad.
Best graphic card. Now, this is an interesting little side here. In 2009, of course, as always, you're at the mercy of the reviewer, because it depends on the benchies.
And who supplied the card, because generally speaking, you're not going to badmouth somebody that sends you a piece of hardware, but you can be
objective. Exactly. So they are saying the top 2 cards in 2009 were the ATI Radeon HD 5970. So give us some specs on that beast.
GPU clock at 720 megahertz, memory clock at 1,000, and it had 2 gigabytes of DDR5.
And then, of course, NVIDIA's offering the GTX 295. I never had one of those, Dennis.
Not many people did, because this was the one that had two GPUs.
Oh, yeah.
It had two cards. It was a self-contained SLI board.
I wish they would do that again. If you're listening out there, we want our SLI back, but we'll take it on a single card, as long as it's not, you know, $5,700. All right.
And require a 1,200-watt power supply just to power the card.
Okay, maybe I don't want it.
All right, so the 295 had a core clock of 576 megahertz, shader clock of, yeah, because they had shaders, 1,242, memory clock at 999, because that 1 megahertz, it broke everything.
I feel like a larger heatsink was needed.
Very much so.
Hey, and it had DDR3, really?
Yeah, it did, because it was kind of treated like a PC.
Interesting. So, you know, just kind of maybe off the cuff, what is a modern GeForce GTX got in the way of clocks and shaders? That I feel like I should know off the cuff, but are we like four times that now?
Maybe. Let's take a look at the card that you just bought, the RTX 2070 Super from MSI, the Gaming X.
Okay.
The core clocks, we basically have a boost clock of 1800 megahertz.
Ooh.
And we have 2560 CUDA cores. That's how many shaders it has in there.
Right.
We don't necessarily have a shader clock like we had back then, but we have a memory speed of 14 gigabits at 8 gigabytes of GDDR6.
And the sweet irony here is that the cards probably cost pretty close to the same amount.
Yeah, that's the really sad part, really, is the fact that the cost has really just kind of shifted.
Well, and some of that is thanks to the old mining culture. Fortunately, that is mostly behind us.
So I thought it might be kind of fun to go and look back at some of the, I don't know, the Halo products that we reviewed back in 2009 and just kind of go down, you know, a little bit of memory lane, really.
Yeah, I think that'll be kind of fun. For the most part, we had access to a lot of cutting-edge hardware. And I know this is, again, where you and I had slightly different perspectives on hardware, which is part of why we started working together in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
For example, back in 2009, I ran two different machines because...
Two?
Indecisive. Now, because at the time, you couldn't really get an ATI AMD machine to work very well with Intel and NVIDIA stuff and vice versa. So I found it, for at least professional reasons, I had to have two completely separate platforms.
Well, and there was a legitimate driver issue between that. You couldn't run SLI on certain platforms. You couldn't run Crossfire on certain platforms.
So in a way, I am glad that over the years they have learned to play nice together, even if they sometimes don't.
Unfortunately, the site that you wrote for is not around anymore.
Oh, rest in peace.
But we could go to thearchive.org and pull up the Wayback Machine. So the first one I have here is the Coolit Domino ALC Water Cooling Kit.
Oh, yay. Now, what a great thing. I was always a Coolit fan. Now, for those of you out there that don't want to waste your time tracking down these ancient articles, Coolit was a company that specialized in high-end, all-in-one coolers, I guess, obviously. And they were most famous, as you may have heard over the years, us talk about, for their Peltier coolers.
That's when you could run a Peltier in a machine off of the power supply that would run the entire machine and not overload anything.
I have to tell you that all the time people still come up to me and go, hey, well, couldn't you build a really good water cooling system and use a Peltier as a chiller? And I just kind of shrug and say, yeah.
not so much. There were coolers that had Peltiers in them, though. I think the... Well, we have the Cooler Master V10, I believe. It had a Peltier as part of the radiator setup. It was its own little radiator off to the side, which was kind of fun. And there was some off-the-shelf Peltiers you could buy and match them with a water block and actually cool your CPU.
Yeah, and I'm still sure there are folks out there in the DIY space that are still playing with those things and trying to make them work. But
yeah, well, the big problem is the processors now are too powerful for the Peltiers, and to run a Peltier that would dissipate that much heat would be too big. And
Yeah, so speaking of which, the last Coolit product, and I held onto it for years, was the Eliminator. And if I'm not mistaken, it had six separate Peltiers on a gigantic heatsink trying to cool more modern hardware before they threw in the towel.
And we gave that away at a LAN party.
Not too long ago. It's an antique. But let's talk about the machine I was running in these days. Now this, if I'm not mistaken, was my AMD build.
Okay, well go ahead, read down the specs.
Let's take a look. So of course, Windows 7 days, I was running a Gigabyte GAMA 790 GP-DS48. And that's a mouthful. But basically the 790 chipset. And that's an AM3 socket, if I recall correctly.
Yep, AM3...
Or maybe 3 Plus? It's pretty close to that era.
Yeah, it was one of the two. The Plus was just a voltage change.
And, of course, I was running a rockin' CPU back in those days, an AMD Athlon 7850 Black Edition.
It had to be a Black Edition because...
Overclocking!
It's the only one you could change the multiplier additions on.
So much like Intel is doing these days, AMD back in those days, and still a little bit these days, would only offer a handful of Black Edition processors or a handful of hand-picked processors that were overclock friendly. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a little bit of an obsolete viewpoint, but we still see it in the market today.
Well, the Ryzen CPUs now, they're all unlocked, mm-hmm. but you have to match it with a chipset to allow that multiplier change.
Excellent. I loved that thing. It was fun and very stable.
Oh, hey, you were running Crucial Ballistics Tracer Memory.
Yep. Even back in those days, I was a Crucial fanboy, and Ballistics Tracer Memory was one of my favorites.
Oh, and look at this. You had the VisionTech HD 3870 X2. That sounds very, very familiar, like my video card.
So you can today go back into the Wayback Machine on Hardware Asylum and find the review for this VisionTech HD 3870. This is one of the first reviews that I wrote for this site back when we were Ninja Lane.
Well, it's actually on Ninja Lane, and it's credited as Guest Ninja because you were affiliated with Club Overclock.
So now you know the secret. I am the Guest Ninja from back in those days. So this 3870 X2 is a beautiful card, and I just really don't feel like they've made a card this pretty since. I mean, whoa. Two beautiful copper coolers open on the surface. Beautiful.
And two GPUs on the same card.
And two GPUs on. Man, I miss those days. Why are we not still doing that? Power supply, an Ultra X3, 1,000 watt.
Yeah, Ultra was giving away power supplies a lot back then.
Yeah, Ultra was kind of the mainstream back in the day. A good bang for your buck and one of the early modular power suppliers.
And then, see, you had a 500 gig hard drive. Ironically, I've been running a 500 gig hard drive in my main machine well past 2009. Yep. But I have a full network here in the lab that stores all my data, mm-hmm. so I just needed it for games.
And look at that very expensive 16X Plexter DVD burner.
Oh, yeah.
I sad to say that probably cost as much as all that RAM all by itself.
And you probably still have it.
I might, actually, in one of my machines. They work like a gem.
Let's look at Ninja Lane, see what we got here.
Okay.
Well, here's that VisionTech card.
Oh, so beautiful.
My pick is going to be, not necessarily in my build, because every motherboard and every video card that I reviewed, I would set up a new build for. So it wasn't my main machine. It was something out of the closet, just kind of cobbled together so I could do the review. It gets tore down and put back. But we have here the Foxconn Blood Rage X58. This was a motherboard for Nehalem-based CPUs.
See, now I would have told you that was a much newer motherboard because it really was kind of ahead of its time.
It was. And this was one of those motherboards that was in your face with overclocking.
Nice.
Because it was designed from the ground up to be an overclocking motherboard platform. This is also when Shimino was working for Foxconn, so that's kind of where a lot of that came from. The equivalent to this particular board nowadays would be like the Asus Apex motherboards.
Ooh.
And some of the EVGA Darks. But with this platform, we have basically the X58 fully tweaked to take advantage of the overclocking aspects of the chipset and processor. It came with a water block that you could put on the chipset or an LN2 evaporator.
Really? Factory?
Factory.
Oh, nice.
The idea here was that to overclock the X58, it wasn't based on the CPU per se. It was based off of the chipset. So you could overclock a 920 that was a locked CPU by overclocking the chipset, basically overclocking base clock. And to get past, let's see, what was it? It was like 150 megahertz or something like that. You had to chill the CPU down to 100 degrees or negative 100.
Negative 100, wow.
And chill the chipset to like, I think it was like negative 40 to get the two clocks to talk to each other and allow it to go faster.
Wow, man. They don't make them like that anymore.
No. But if you had the 980, it was an unlocked CPU. It was one of the extreme editions. So then you could change the multipliers and you didn't need this fancy cooling on the chipset. But to get the most out of every processor on the market, this is the board for you.
Man, I bet that was a spendy little beast.
Yeah, it was. Oh, funny story here. And I'll link this down in the show notes, but the logos that are on the motherboard, because it said Blood Rage on the VRM cooler and had Blood Rage over here, or Foxconn on one of the memory VRMs. But on the evaporator, these are metal logos that are just glued on.
Nice.
Well, when I got this out and I was taking pictures, I was running my finger across it, and it actually sliced a good almost inch into my thumb.
The Blood Rage took some blood.
It was pretty awesome. I was going to post a picture of it, and I want to say another editor that had the same board did that very thing. And I went and commented saying, hey, yeah, I did that, you know.
So you must have some idea of what the build was, though.
Well, I put a 920 in this because I didn't have the 980 at the time, or maybe I did the 980. Right now I'm looking at the preview article because this has got some of the best pictures in here.
So pretty. Remember when Foxconn used to make good motherboards?
No. They made a bunch. Mm-hmm. This was really the last great one, though. They had the Black Ops, which was an X48 motherboard. This came out a couple years beforehand, and that was for the LGA 775. And that was really what put Foxconn and their Quantum Force motherboards on the map. This was the follow-up, and it was an excellent board. Well, yeah, let's pull up the system as it was tested section.
All right.
We have the Foxconn Quantum Force Blood Rage X58 Intel X58 chipset motherboard. A Core i7-920.
Oh, you called it.
I did. And this one has 2.6 gigahertz, quad-core, obviously. A custom water cooler. I was using a Thermalright XWB-01. And I want to say that this was one of the best water blocks I had ever used during that whole era.
Very nice.
It was one of the first ones to use a microfin in the base. It was awesome. We had 3 G-Skill Pi Black DDR3 modules because it was triple channel. We have a VisionTech 3870.
All right. Just a single?
Just a single. This was one of the first VisionTechs that I actually purchased, and I used it on the test bench quite a bit during this era.
Ooh.
We had a Wichten Digital Raptor X 150 gigabyte serial AT 10,000 RPM drive.
Spoiled.
And an LGA 20X Super Multi Blu-ray player. Or maybe that's a DVD. I think that might have been a DVD.
Super Multi? Ah, who knows? LG, they were always so stable.
They were. And a 730-watt power supply. And I was using Vista back then.
It's so little. 730.
730. That's all you needed. Actually, you still only need that.
Well, for most builds.
And then I did a reference, because all of my reviews have a primary system, and then I pull in previous reviews so that we can get an idea of what one system would perform against the other.
Okay.
And so the reference system here was the Quantum Force Black Ops X48, which is also the one we talked about. And it was using a Core 2 Quad Q6600 at 2.4 gigahertz.
Ah, that sounds very familiar.
Yeah. Didn't you say you had an Intel build as long with your AMD build?
I did indeed. And that's why it sounds so familiar, because I really felt like the Q6600 processor was the sweet spot for a really long time. Now, you talked about running that video card for a while, but I had a Q6600 for a long time, stable and fast, right?
Oh, yeah.
But the build I based around it, ironically, is running a motherboard from ASUS, a P5 E3 Deluxe Wi-Fi AP at-on edition.
But you had Wi-Fi on board?
Two, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Right. Back in those days, the top ASUS motherboards, and some still do, they check every box.
Oh, yeah. It's like getting the Titanium edition or something.
It really is. Now, I feel like maybe we should have a talk about that in a minute, but let me finish, because I had the Q6600. Now, in this machine, I'm running 2 2-gig kits from OCZ. Remember them?
Oh, yes. They kind of, well, they got consumed. But yeah, that was an awesome brand.
Fast. Now, this was PC3 12800 Extreme Edition hand-picked memory modules, Dennis.
Did you hand-pick them?
They did, actually. All of their Extreme Edition were hand-binned back in those days, which is maybe part of why they didn't survive, because it's a very expensive model and a small market. Now for graphics, the Sapphire 4870 Toxic Edition.
Toxic Editions were, they were like the Devil 13s of the era.
Yeah, you got the fancy boxes and the cool graphics and the custom built cooling solution.
Didn't they have like an alien on them or something?
Oh my gosh. You know, something. I don't even remember. Worth maybe looking up because it was a beautiful card also. And one of those limited editions that today we chase with things like the classifieds and the lightnings whatnot. So trying to get the Toxic Edition was what I used to do back in those days on the ATI side. Yeah. Now I ran, again, a Antec this time, True Power Quattro 1000 watt. See, look, who was snobby with their power supplies back in the day, right?
Double 1000s.
And then for drives in this one, both a 250 and a 750, which is kind of the early predecessor to what a lot of us do now still. Man. One fast small drive, one slower storage drive.
I'm going to say this is probably your main machine.
Yes, it was. Yeah. But back in those days, it was touch and go on who had the better graphics card.
That is very true.
All the way up until physics, right?
And then it became, what game do you want to play?
Exactly. Now, I want to talk a little bit more about motherboards because I noticed something kind of interesting. Now, I had two relatively high-end motherboards, and you had definitely a high-end motherboard. Mm-hmm. But I think if I recall when we go back and talk about nostalgia for the old days, we never talk about any of these motherboards because we're usually talking about cool old motherboards from companies like DFI, the LAN parties, right?
Yep.
And the Dragon motherboards and those kinds of things.
The Soyo Dragon.
The Soyo Dragon, probably my all-time favorite motherboard with the white UV reactive traces. Come on a blue board.
yeah. Actually, we get really snobby with motherboards.
Oh,
but,
no.
But if we want to stay within the 2009 era.
Right.
AMD was pretty hot during that time.
Yes, they were.
We had the Lampari DK, which is the dark edition, or the one that was really designed for the mainstream users. The DK 790 FXB. Now, B at the very end meant that this was a second generation release.
Right.
So we have an updated version. The original was back in 2007, and that was using the 790 FX chipset, and now we have a slightly revised version.
Now, this is when they made the jump to DDR3, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And is this the AM3 or the AM3 Plus somewhere? There it is.
In there somewhere.
This is the jump from AM2 Plus to AM3, it looks like.
Yeah.
So back in those days, the backwards compatibility was really awesome, even if the processors were maybe not so much.
We have UV reactive slots and covers because that was a DFI LAN party stable. This was also during the era when DFI was partnering with Thermalright to design their VRM coolers. So we have a high-end heat pipe manufacturer that was making CPU coolers designing VRM coolers for motherboards.
Amazing. Now, LAN party motherboards also came with a bunch of cool LAN accessories.
Well, that was in the early ones. I don't believe that the darks came with all that fancy stuff.
No stickers, no carry straps, nothing.
Well, let's take a look at the included goodies page and take a look. So we have an IO cover, we have an SLI bridge, we have some manuals, and we have some cables.
Well, at least the cables look like they're UV reactive also, and they are color coordinated with the fancy neon motherboard.
The boards that you are thinking of were back in like the Athlon XP days, where they came with carry straps for your case, and they came with breakout panels, and it was pretty awesome.
I have to admit, Dennis, that I have been pining for a UV reactive motherboard for a long time. And not only do we get UV reaction back in those days, but matching UV reactive cables. How is this not a thing for anyone today? I want to know.
Oh, I want to say that it's probably because enthusiasts are cheap. I mean, we, as hardware enthusiasts, we know what it is that we want. And a lot of times when we look at reviews, we're just looking for, you know, a qualified response to what it is that we already know. For the people that are just building their machine from the ground up, maybe they're a first-time builder or they don't have a lot of money, they're not going to necessarily go for a LAN party board of the era because it costs too much. And now the manufacturers are starting to remove some of these really awesome features like carry straps, because when people buy their products, they don't use them. So why include them?
Well, that's true. It does keep the cost more competitive. Well, we've talked about a whole lot of hardware and several builds, both old and new. But I think if I had to say, I don't know that I would want to go back to those machines.
No, 2009 was a great time for hardware because everything that was being released was enthusiast friendly. I mean, the processors, like I mentioned with the X58, if you knew how to overclock the platform, it was really fun. It took a lot to get there, but you could get a lot out of that entire platform. Now, with the new CPUs, it's like, hey, it's a silicon lottery. If you buy a good processor, it might overclock well.
Well, and you do make a good point, because back in those days, we had really strong competition with chipsets, with motherboards, with video cards, with really every piece. So it seemed like everybody was innovating. Mm-hmm. And now there's been so much consolidation, we're kind of back to where, well, there's maybe one, two paths out there. Maybe you're a Threadripper fan, but, you know, it really is not difficult to put together what is the best system in any price point and kind of only have maybe one or two decisions. And that's just not the same.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2020. Thanks for listening.